This is podtech.net. I'm Catherine Girardeau at Java One in San Francisco. Representatives from leading technology companies have been presenting sessions each day on how Java developers and tools are driving innovation in the marketplace. BEA Systems, Inc. put on a session hosted by Bill Roth and Patrick Linsky called Lies, Damn Lies, and Java. In part one of this three-part podcast, they talk about marketplace misconceptions. Chief Researcher and VP at Sun Microsystems, John Gage, introduced the session.
Well, there's been a basic support for Java from the beginning from BEA. BEA has provided tools, BEA has provided ways of thinking about things, BEA has provided frameworks. And now as we watch this explosion of tools, the blending of open source and structured tools, the blending of things that belong to BEA's environment specifically expand enormously. That's what we're going to hear Bill Roth tell you about right now, Bill.
So it's great to be back here, and it's great to, of course, be introduced by someone of the stature of John Gage. We had some late-breaking news. As you know, the title of our presentation is Lies, Damn Lies, and Java, The Truth About the Java Platform. I feel a little bit like Stephen Colbert. It turns out we started out with a quote we thought was from Mark Twain. Then it turns out that it was actually Twain was stealing from Benjamin Disraeli, but apparently Twain was actually wrong. Apparently it was William Courtney from the Royal Statistical Society. So in the interest of accuracy, we want to make sure that you all know where the quote came from. So let us not be accused of plagiarism. So in this context, we want to talk to you about a couple of the misconceptions that are out in the marketplace, all of which we view are ultimately wrong. If you read the trade press and you read blogs, you can come up with some fairly radical ideas. For example, one of them is that there's one universal standard that will make our lives easier. Or if you've listened to the keynotes, you might get the idea that there's no need for commercial software companies anymore, that open source is just one and we all ought to, you know, give up and go work for the county. Or that middleware is obsolete, that middleware companies are obsolete, and that the packaged app vendors are just going to paint this brilliant new future for all of us, and that those of us in the middleware industry are obsolete. Or that Java is the next COBOL, that all these new languages, these dynamic languages like PHP or Ruby, are going to supplant Java. Or, of course, my favorite, that innovation is dead, that there's really no new big thing. Well, I've got kind of one big idea about all these, and that's don't believe everything you read. What we're going to do today is take those myths and do our best to dispel them. And to help me do that, I'd like to bring up Patrick Linsky, who was our representative on the EJB3 spec committee, as well as the CTO of SolarMetric and the architect of BA Code 04.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. So the first one of these myths is that middleware is obsolete. And you'll hear this in a bunch of different contexts. Some people will say it's all about the big packaged app that gives you everything you need. Some people will say you should write your application from, you know, machine code on up and do the whole thing yourself. Well, none of these are quite right. And before we go into why, I want to step back for a second and look at what middleware is, because it's a term that doesn't really get defined that well that often. And so I'm going to give a crack at it. Well, middleware basically is the stuff that's just the plumbing that you're sitting on top of when you're running your application in some type of an environment. So you're deploying into some context, and the middleware is making things happen under the covers, and it's kind of this nuts and bolts stuff. So useful middleware is doing that with common and difficult tasks. So it's taking things that you have to do a lot that are not easy for people to do, but easy for computers to do, and making that happen in a way that really abstracts you away from them. So you don't really see middleware. The whole point of it, good middleware is not easy to spot in your application. And what it's doing for you is it's giving you three main things: freedom, flexibility, and change. It's giving you the ability to write your application without worrying about whether you're locking yourself into a given stack, about the details of what chipset you're running on or what language you're coding against. It gives you the flexibility to change those factors to decide you want to be using a different type of hardware or a different type of operating system. And it gives you the ability to embrace change as it happens in the industry. So as things do change, which inevitably happens, your application can change along with them. So people say that it's going to go away. You need a packaged solution, or it's commoditized, or you look at the middleware space and you have all these different vendors that are just implementing a standard. It's just an easy standard to implement. You have a bunch of interfaces and some rules in the spec. You walk through it, pass the CTS, and you're good. These problems that they're solving are everyone knows about these problems that the middleware stacks are solving anyway. So there's a lot of people who are out there who can do it. And all these vendors are trying to make it happen. And you can get it. You can just download one of these things from the open source community and run it, and that's good enough. And doesn't that just mean it's a commodity? I mean, right? I don't think so, because it's not quite that easy. The basic stuff is commoditizing, and you see this across the board in different areas of the software space. But that commoditization actually enables future, more complex and robust solutions on top of them. And there's also a lot of serious challenges that remain for a middleware product. One of the biggies is just integration. The successful middleware is pulling a lot of different products and technologies together into one holistic solution. And to do that in a way that, works takes a lot of effort. And it takes a lot of effort to figure out how to wire everything together and keep it all running in a happy and kind of cohesive environment. We've been working on our WLS WebLogic Server EJB tech preview for the last several months. And getting that out the door, we had a big integration problem at the end where we had to be pulling everything together. And that's always a big phase of any product release, is pulling all the different assorted parts together. And that's not easy. What the middleware does, what it's going to let you do in terms of letting you run, sure, you're running your middleware services on top of some amorphous blob of middleware. Well, that's going to then, in turn, provide different services, different quality of service, different performance characteristics, different deployment characteristics, whether you're deploying to, a one machine cluster, one machine, your laptop that you're developing on and things run really fast, or if you're developing something that's going to deploy into a cluster of 750 servers out in a WAN environment. Those are all on good middleware. You write the code the same way and you just deploy it in a different way. And of course, finally, just raw quality. Writing any good piece of middleware, kind of by nature, is something that's going to be running. Other people will be running their apps on top of it. It's not an app of its own. Rather, it's something that you use as a foundation or a building block. And if you have bugs in that foundation, they affect a huge number of people. So you got to make these solutions be quality. You don't want to have memory or connection pooling leaks or and security holes or things like that. So these are some of the challenges that make middleware tough. And then, of course, there's places that people can go beyond that. And we'll be talking about that a little bit later. But even just this core capability, even just this raw capability, is the people who say that middleware is a commodity are the people who have commodity middleware. And the reality of the fact is that there's a lot of innovation and a lot of really interesting stuff that happens there. So how do we innovate in this environment?
Thank you, Patrick. One of my favorite topics that I've read in the press is that innovation is dead, that there's no next big thing. And I'm not making this up. Someone of no less a stature than the executive vice president of innovation at IBM said, there's no next big thing. There's no new innovation. Sounds to me like somebody's looking for a title change. But in reality, we believe that innovation is everywhere. Innovation spans the globe. Innovation is happening in Bangalore, Beijing, and Brazil. Do we have the Brazilians here?
Yeah.
There you go. Thank you very much. It's happening from Berkeley to Boston. And there's innovation. It's happening in terms of real-time Java, in terms of real-time application servers, in terms of the virtualization. Patrick's going to talk about innovation in terms of containers, and the innovation there, as well as persistence. Our firm belief is that the quality of the innovation and the quality of the code that's used is more important than where it comes from. What's important is the quality and the content of that innovation. Let me give you some examples of where BEA has been innovating and where we've been delivering real value on top of the standards. Areas like atomic dynamic configuration. Now, what does that mean? The ability to change the configuration of an application server and not bring it down. The ability to group a set of changes and have them all succeed as a unit or have them all roll back as a unit. Real-time area, in the real-time. We've recently released WebLogic Real-Time. That's the ability to actually set a deterministic window for your garbage collection. We've also made WebLogic Server hot swappable. Did you know that you can update an application on WebLogic Server from the old version to the new version without your users seeing any downtime? We've also built the world's first converged container that brings SIP into a full-fledged member of the application server functionality. We have whole server migration, the ability to fail over to any available hardware, overload protection, to be able to manage spikes in load. And my personal favorite feature, did you know that it's possible to replicate session state across clusters that may be separated by two clusters that are in the same city, or even across a broad network in a wide area network? These are the areas in innovation that we've been focusing on. And now to give us a little bit more, I'd like to turn it back over to Patrick to tell us some of the other areas where innovation is occurring. There you go.
Thanks, Bill. So Bill's talked about some of the places that we've been innovating on WebLogic Server. And I want to talk a little bit about some places that we're thinking of innovating or moving to in the future, or even some places that we're not innovating, but other people are and or should be. So I guess a good first example is the Spring Framework. The Spring Framework is a good example of innovation happening outside of the kind of establishment and then coming right back into it. When Rod Johnson started working on the Spring Framework code a few years ago, he was doing that in response to the difficulty of J2EE development. It was too hard, he didn't like it, decided he'd do something about it. So did something about it, nobody was really too happy with him for doing something about it. It wasn't really, or nobody in the vendor space was really too happy about that back at the time. But then people started realizing, developers need this. This is something that's really useful and something that enables more powerful development and easier development, et cetera. And that came full circle back into vendor support, back into a lot of the stuff you're seeing and hearing about this week about Java EE 5 is all about taking some of the concepts of developer simplicity and some of the patterns that have been developed by the people at Interface 21 and turning that into prescriptions in the spec, with spec ways of doing these same operations. So that's a good example of something that has happened. We also see the Rails community, Ruby on Rails. Essentially, it's a web-based, domain-specific language implemented in Ruby. This is a really interesting simplification of how to write a non-enterprise scale application that's dealing with one database, one kind of usage model, et cetera, and doing that in a very easy way without having to go through a lot of extra hoops and do a lot of extra deployment descriptor coding and whatnot. Well, how can we take that and turn that back into something that runs in the Java EE platform? How can we bring that and take that ease of use at the kind of the single deployment, single database type and bring that into an environment that has distributed transaction capabilities, that has failover, that has load balancing and clusterability and all these other capabilities that Java EE gives us? Those are the types of places where we should be looking for innovation and figuring out how to bring that into the world we live in. I mean, other examples on this slide, Ajax. Ajax is becoming almost a requirement in web applications in terms of usability at this point. And as the frameworks are evolving to make this something where you can see a clear, clear ways forward for the Ajax technologies, we should be seeing this type of stuff materializing inside of application servers and inside of the Java EE5 spec platform technologies as well. Another example, adaptive systems that can just self-heal themselves without you having to go and you know, pour through log files and write your own little Perl parser to figure out what's going on where and whatnot. Just let the system fix itself. You see that already in at the JVM level when we look at things like Hotspot that analyze your code and fix it. Why don't we see that at other parts of the application server stack, of the middleware stack? Another area I think is actually innovative, despite its kind of normal connotations, is service-oriented architectures. Now, I think this is the case because, you know, normally what you hear people say about SOA and services-oriented architectures is that it's the next big thing. And they don't really get past that. It's usually just the next big thing, and then, right? And I think that that's a little bit too simplistic. I think that it's not the next big thing, but rather it's a next big thing. And this is where the innovation starts to come in, is that when we look at what we do today, application infrastructure coding, we write Java code that turns into components that we can then use to build our application or our, you know, set of two or three applications. That's kind of like building a building. That's the way I like to think about it, is that what we're doing is we're designing a solution that meets some design goals and needs, and maybe it's a warehouse, or maybe it's an office building, or what have you. That's the application infrastructure. And the place that SOA comes into the picture is the service infrastructure. It's when you take that building and put it in the context of a whole city. When you start worrying about the plumbing and the wiring and the power supply and traffic flow and sidewalks and height restrictions and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's the innovations in Java EE are that we can take applications we write as Java EE 5 or 4 or et cetera applications that we've developed, and all we need to do, because it's a well-defined distributed component model, those can then become pieces of our larger, you know, SOA orchestrated environment that, you know, where computers are talking to computers instead of people talking to computers all the time. And that's where I think that we're gonna see SOA really fitting in, is not the next big thing, throw away your Java code and re-implement everything in XML, but rather, how do we take the Java assets we have and figure out how to, and that we're developing, and figure out how to make them things that can participate in these, you know, computer-to-computer environments.